A splendid day to you. Welcome in to the What Podcast with Bands This Year That Matter, a tour around festival life. Barry Quarter, Lord Taco, I'm Brad. Hi, guys. How's everyone doing?
Hey.
Great.
You know, I don't want to interrupt, but boy, look at that good looking shirt on Lord Taco today.
You see that?
Man, I thought you were talking about. Okay. Love it. Look at Taco.
You know, the amount of vanity between me and Barry is
it's a little
astronomical.
Much. It's a little much.
It is a little much.
But I am having a good hair day.
Oh, is that right? Good for you.
I started to call you on Thursday because I was
tell me about a good hair day.
I was having an amazing hair day.
Barry, this is okay, Dad.
I was going to call. Literally, I thought I need to call Brad.
I know, but Dad, you know, normally what people would do in the 21st century is take a picture of it and then text it to someone. Calling them is not going to do anything.
Yeah, but then I don't get the satisfaction.
Okay.
I want the reaction. I need the live, you know.
You could just FaceTime me. If you want to FaceTime me your hair
every day.
Well, that's
the same as calling, isn't it? I mean,
that's not the same as calling. No, one is a visual element. The other is audio.
All right. Next time I'll know. Okay. When I'm having that kind of a hair day, I still have that Boris Johnson thing going on right here. We're going to get that fixed.
This has turned into Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, man. This is a hair care product show. Taco, how's your cut doing?
It's needs some work.
Okay, good.
It's a little messy from camping this weekend.
Yeah, why were you camping? Why in the world would you camp in 25-degree weather? What are you doing?
Why
to
not? It's beautiful. They have waterfall and trees, and it was great.
You know, they don't have heat.
Yeah, I brought my own. We made a fire. I brought a propane heater.
But with a fire, though, with a fire, how can you ever breathe the next day? I never can breathe well the next day.
Why? Because all the smoke?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they say smoke follows beauty. So maybe that's.
I did wonder. It was cold.
Beautiful.
So you were camping in the bus?
Mm-hmm.
That's where. Oh, nice. Good for you. Wow.
That's not really camping, though, is it? It's just parking. You literally just drive up and park.
What? How is that not camping?
Okay.
I'm still in a tent.
Yeah, I think. No, you're not in a tent. You're in a car.
Yeah. Yeah. It's on top of the bus. The tent's on top.
I guess. You know, it's part of the world where I can't do it. I mean, you camp outside of Bonnaroo, and that is very strange to me.
Yeah, the only camping Brad and me is Bonnaroo, right?
Well, yeah, the only time you leave your house is Bonnaroo.
Barry, you came to that mini room.
That's true. I had a good time, and
did you camp, Barry? You didn't leave, or did you sleep in the car?
He slept in the car.
Technically, I slept in my driver's seat in my truck, and when the sun came up, I was gone.
You did not camp.
He didn't even take his seatbelt off.
That's true.
That's the ultimate dad move. I got to be safe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get her ticket. That's
he drove true. In, rolled down the window, said hi, passed out.
I did more than say hi, remember, because I rolled in there with you and Mitchell.
That's right.
Till 5 in the morning. Whew, that was a long night. That was
just sitting in the car. You know, you're like Brian Stone at Bonnaroo, just sitting there listening to the Shins in his car.
No, I tell you what, that was a bad decision driving home because I woke up and thought, I'm going home. And I was about an hour down the road and I thought, I'm still at the party. This was not a good decision.
Well, the party was in your car, so it just continued down the road.
Yeah, I hope I make it home.
Yeah. Actually, I was going to start this. It's a quick show today because I've got a couple of things I want to bring up. But the main thing is I had this really interesting conversation with Jack Antonoff from Bleachers. And it was supposed to be an interview for the radio station, but it started as just a chit chat about Bonnaroo. And he waxed poetic about Bonnaroo in a way that I've not really heard an artist do in one of these just radio interviews. I mean, he's got a new album. He's coming to town. And that's what really the focus of the chat was going to be about. But he just started it on Bonnaroo and half of our conversation was gone, you know? So I want to play that because it was so interesting. But I've got assurances that he will be coming back to do a long form chat with us about the Super Jam and some other things. One thing in particular is really interesting about this chat that I didn't even know about. He played Bonnaroo before he was in Fun. So when he went to Bonnaroo with Fun in whatever year that was, Barry, 2007, 8, I can't remember. But that was not the first time Jack Antonoff performed at Bonnaroo. He'll tell you what band he was in during that chat later on this afternoon.
I'm excited to hear it. I'm excited to hear that. I'm excited to see what he's going to do.
Well,
we talked about that.
He brings it up. Yeah, what he's going to be doing.
I think we talked about it, right? That's going to be one of the more exciting things about this year, whatever it is he has in mind, because I think it's going to be pretty epic.
Well, it brings up the obvious question. Is there a Super Jam that you remember more than any?
Oh, for me, it's easy.
Which one?
Yeah, it's the Billy Idol and Larry Graham, John Oates. That was the best one. There was no question for me.
That was that the John Oates. Wait, was it Daryl Hall or John Oates?
I know I always have to do the same thing.
I think it was Daryl Hall that did it.
No, it's John Oates.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was John Oates and
I'll
Brittany.
Be honest with you, if they both walked into the room, I wouldn't know which one.
I know, and it's Daryl Hall, Daryl Oates. You know, I'm the same, but no, I'm pretty sure. But that was Brittany.
Yeah, that was the Britney year. That's right.
And
that was the
Billy.
Only one. I think that's the only one I have sat through the whole way.
Yeah, it was great. It was amazing. We were all of Camp Nut Butter was there.
But was there a theme for it?
Was there a theme?
Yeah.
No, but if you remember, we saw Billy Idol. Which was great. And basically walked across the road there. And then that started. And he came over and joined.
Yeah.
That was my favorite. And that to me is the one, that's what I compare them all to. That's what I think they all should be like. That's what I think.
Well, explain what it should be like.
Super jams are somebody curates it. They basically put somebody in charge. In this case, it was John Oates. And they say, all right, go get whoever you want, who's going to be there. And they curate, a set, 90 minutes. And in this case, Larry Graham basically invented the slap bass that we all know, the funk, funkadelic, sound. So, I mean, it was just amazing. All of the people that were up there, and then the songs were great. It's just what it sounds like. It's a super jam. Whoever's on the farm come play, but they plan it ahead of time. It's not just show up. So
okay.
It's curated.
Okay. So the problem is that most of the super jams are not ever very good because they're always so messy. There's shit happening all over the place. I just generally don't enjoy them for some reason.
Yes.
I guess I don't really know why.
I know. And that, you're not the first to say that. Everyone that is gone for many years says that.
Like Grizz did one that I thought was just monumentally boring. And they become year after year, they've become just a walk by for me unless it's somebody that I really, really want to see. Now, I will say the only year that I can probably, I don't know, maybe not, where we check in to get our credentials at Bonnaroo, there is a big ballroom right next door to it. And that's where they practice the super jam.
Right.
So it's a little odd to like see the guys walking in and out of the door and hear what's happening on the other side, literally hours before they play it.
You know what it is? It's become like a vanity thing for them. It's become more about them than the audience, I think. And that one was not. That was about having fun.
What about the bluegrass ones that Ed Helms always put together?
Yeah, those are always great. If you like bluegrass, and I don't. So, yeah, okay. But I mean, those were always right? I mean, those were always well received.
Yeah, people usually like them a lot. And it's surprising it's Ed Helms. He's so, so good.
Right, right.
I'm trying to think of who else put together a really good super jam in the past.
Wasn't it John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin and Stuart Copeland from The Police? That was the one I heard.
That's way back.
I know.
Way, way back.
And I missed that one because I didn't, you know, I didn't know what they were going to be. But that was the only other one I ever heard of that was so epic.
Well, there was one that Jack Antonoff was with before, and it was that dance party one where they had like Reggie Watts came out and did something. Chance was out. Chance is there every year, by the way. I mean, most years you go back in the Super Jam history and Chance the Rapper is part of, you know, a Super Jam at least because he's the mayor of Bonnaroo. You had Run DMC was there. Pretty Lights did it. And it was just a big dance party and it did dance song after dance song. But other than that, I can't really remember
when Elvis Costello was there.
That was the Billy Idol year.
No, that was at 08.
All right.
Elvis, because Kelly, my wife, came up for that one. That was the Springsteen year.
That's right.
8 or 9. It's an interesting question.
How about the year where Jim James was doing it and R. Kelly came out and sang Sam Cooke?
See, that's what I mean.
A sentence I was not expecting to say in 2022. Remember when R. Kelly sang Sam Cooke at Bonnaroo? It really takes a different, you know, I totally forgot about that. By the way, I know what I'm going to hear. That R. Kelly show is actually pretty damn good. He released the doves, it was really, really well done. And he was keeping the songs, it was hit after hit, but he was keeping those songs at about a minute 45 apiece and just barreling through all of those hits. It was kind of pretty fun, to be honest with you.
Yeah. I'm excited to hear your interview. I'm excited to hear what he's going to do. I hope we get him later.
We will.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
And the back to the Super Jam, the only other one that I can remember is the Skrillex one. And if you gave me $1,000, I couldn't put one person in that Super Jam. I don't know the first person that was in it.
That's what I'm saying. It went from the John Oates one to, man, this was maybe one of my favorite shows, you know, top 10 anyway. Super Jam?
Well, I mean, he explains what his mission is, and it's not hard to figure out, but he at least says it outright what his theme is for Super Jam 2022. The other thing I wanted to get to before I get to the Spotify stuff, Rolling Stone bought a festival, the magazine Rolling Stone, now becoming the second publication to get into the music festival business. You know, Pitchfork has the Pitchfork Music Festival, and now Rolling Stone has their own, and they bought Life is Beautiful. Any entity that's running one of these that's not the two conglomerates, I feel is a welcomed addition to the club. But how about that? Rolling Stone entering into the music festival world, Barry.
I got
Time Street Press next.
Yeah, we're next.
Yeah. When are we buying a festival?
Yeah, brought to you by. Yeah.
If we did have our own music festival, let's be honest, our only headliners would be Repeat, Repeat.
Repeat, Repeat.
All we got.
I already know what the corporate sponsor is.
Yeah, we got PBR.
We got PBR.
Whether they like it or not, whether they pay us money or not, they're going to be our sponsor.
That's all you're drinking.
Yeah. I mean, if we did a music festival with our, if we did our own music festival, it would be like Repeat, Repeat, Cautious Clay, Duran Jones. Wow. And we've got a pretty good music festival with the guests that have been on the show.
We could put Warren together Treaty. A pretty good lineup here. Warren Treaty, Gilfillian, I mean, Devin, I think Krungbin, Sylvanesso.
Yeah,
Briston. We could put together a pretty good lineup.
I'm trying to think about the other artists that we've had on the show, and I can't think of any of them.
Well, you know,
I can't think of another one.
You're guy from
St. Paul.
Radiohead. St. Paul.
We got, we got EOB. Yeah. Would Radiohead EOB. Be? Would that count as Radiohead, or would I just get
we
EOB?
We got Paul Janaway. I think we could put together a pretty good lineup.
That's not bad. I mean, somebody create that poster for us. Take all the guests that we have and turn it into a festival poster. I mean, I'm too lazy to do it, but if you do it, it would be very exciting for us.
I think you got a challenge there, Taco. You're the graphic guy. Put together a list of guests that we've had on the show,
like as a
poster,
like a poster.
I like it.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's wrap up with our chat with my chat with Jack Antonoff, who will be your special Super Jam headliner. Doing 1984, Jack Antonoff's 1984, and he'll explain what that means here on the What Podcast.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm so happy to see you again, mainly because, I mean, look, you're the most interesting man in music.
You're very sweet to me and very mean to you.
That's how it's done. I will say, though, you know, the last time I saw you specifically, it was with Fun, not only in the tour in the Ryman, but also early that year at Bonnaroo. I wonder if, like, you're standing at the Bonnaroo stage with a number one single years and years and years ago, and you said to yourself, I'm going to be my generation's Rick Rubin.
It's interesting you bring up Bonnaroo and the concept of, you know, feeling excited or proud, because Bonnaroo plays a crazy role in my history, because my first band, Steel Train, through like a weird series of events, we got to play the Thursday night, 1 a.m. Bonnaroo slot, and this is 2004 or 2005. Okay,
I'm a Bonnaroo historian at my core, and I did not know that.
Yes, and if you as a Bonnaroo historian, you know that back then that slot, and this was before like even there was like festival apps and you could curate your experience. This was more back in the day where if you got on Bonnaroo, you were going to play to 15,000 people. It didn't matter who you were. That's no right. One knew my band. The day before, we played in Atlanta to 10 people. The day after, we played Sticky Fingers and Little Rock for 5 people. Get up on stage in Bonnaroo. And my first experience playing to a crowd that big. And it's significant because you can't describe it. You know, when you play to 50 people, it's a club show, 100 people, cool. A few hundred people starts to get this like kinetic, bigger vibe. But I can't tell you what it was like as a performer to go from the biggest shows I ever played were a few hundred people to getting up at
this tent or that tent at this that tent. Point.
That tent. And there's 15,000 people there. And I fucking lost my mind. And it's still one of the most formative experiences.
Did you have the same feeling when Fun? Because the crazy thing about the Fun show, and I'll say this to anybody that'll listen, and I don't think it's happened since, but nobody had a number one single at the time they played at Bonnaroo until guys. Yeah.
I didn't know that. That one was a little bit less enjoyable because life was such a whirlwind then. But then I got to do it with Bleachers, I think in 2016 or 17, which was one of my favorite shows. And to come back this year and do it again and then do the Super Jam, it's all, if you give a shit about Bonnaroo, you know how important Super Jam is and all these things.
I mean, look, I do. I mean, Bonnaroo is my life. I used to be in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and I even run a Bonnaroo podcast. We do a podcast for Bonnaroo, on the Consequence Podcast Network. So, look, it's a daily conversation for us. Bonnaroo is in our blood, and we live it. And not only do we live the actual experience and the life that the lifestyle that it really means, but the nerdy part of it, right? So, what I wonder is, how did that band that you had first get on that bill in 2004?
It was like some really weird thing with our distributor, which was Sanctuary at the time. It was a really random thing. I remember when we got the official offer, we were like screaming and celebrating. I did it 3 times with that band over the years. Once with Fun, once with Bleachers, and then 2022 will be the sixth time, wow. Second time with bleachers, and then seventh if you include Super Jam. I mean, it's sort of like it's sort of the original great modern American festival that actually modeled itself after the great European festivals.
That's right.
Coachella doesn't really count because that's become a whole different thing. Mm-hmm. And then all the other festivals are, Lollapalooza, which is great, Gumball, they're city festivals, different things.
That's right.
Bonnaroo is kind of like that last one, first one and last one where people are just really pot committed for the weekend.
Yeah.
Because they're gross, you know, they're like not showering and stuff. And I think it's a different vibe. When someone is living in a tent, they're like a vibe more feral than if they're in like a, you know, boutique hotel around the corner.
That's right. And Jack, that's what we say over and over. The reason that Bonnaroo is so great and the reason why there's a real feeling there is because they're in it. The people that go are so in the moment. And it almost feels, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but of all the people that we've talked to, they all say the same thing. They can feel it on stage, so then the artist gives it back to them even more so because of the feeling they're getting from the audience.
Well, it goes two ways because it's like, obviously, like, not sleeping in a tent anymore, but like, you know, it's not like some festival where I'm going to, you know, I'm in the mud too. I'm in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Like, the barrier of entry is so high. Mm. And you feel this way. It's like, you know, like you go play a show, it's like, cool, amazing, whatever. You go play a show in some random weird place. Like, I remember we did this like really weird mountain town in Colorado once. And I was like, is anyone going to come to this? And the people that were there was just like this shared experience. And yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. And then also this year, man, like having it canceled 2 years in a row, once because of the pandemic, once because of flooding.
That's right. Yeah.
Which is like this insult to injury. I just think it's going to be.
Which none of us saw coming. And then it ended up being such a bigger event for like the Northeast than it was even for us in the South. I let me ask you, when it comes to the Super Jam, what in the world are you putting together? When you say 1984, are you doing hits from 1984?
Yeah, I was born in 1984.
I figured that. Yeah.
It's also just one of my favorite years of music. I think it's like one of these like crazy weird years in music where like, there was this insane cross section of things happening that were of all different genres, but all hitting the world at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I like the Orwellness of it, and so yeah, we're gonna play a ton of music from that time. We have all these insane special guests, and it'll just be a really special one.
Well, you really do sort of, I feel like in everything you do have a thread through history, right? You know, I know there's the common Bruce Springsteen thing because of the jersey, but I mean, you take your new track. I hear Paul Simon through this like crazy. You have such a reverence for the past. I wonder where that comes from.
I just like it. I mean, I think that I don't see like art as this like, you know, absurdly evolving thing where you need to like access like any sort of crazy, shocking ideas outside of just telling your story, which is the most shocking thing. So I don't hear, if I listen to Paul Simon or Joni Mitchell or someone like it doesn't sound old to me.
Mm.
And when I hear something that came out yesterday, it doesn't sound new to me. It just kind of hits me or doesn't. And I think it's sort of a dangerous road to go down to like, you know, I mean, I'm not going like full Jack White on it and like only using like certain equipment that's like from a different era, which I have total respect to. Yeah. You know, like I use modern stuff. I'll put 808s in a song with post-string guitars. I don't care. But I guess my point is I don't sit around and think, this is pastiche, this isn't. I just think if it is exciting, and if something is exciting, then I think it's modern. And I think if you get into the conversation of what is modern, like, you know, once it was trap and now it's acoustic stuff and now it's this and now guitars are back, it's just sort of like a losing game because by the time you have time to even think about what sonics are modern, isn't it like arguably not modern anymore? So it's a little like who gives a shit. So I just kind of look for what's exciting.
And all of a sudden, the moment's passed you by, you know?
Yeah. It's like that, you know, in that Metallica documentary when they're having an argument about how guitar solos are pastiche. But then Kirk is saying, well, to play into what's pastiche isn't that technically pastiche. It's like, you know, you kind of realize like you're at your best as a songwriter and a band leader if you're just doing the shit that feels really exciting to you at the time. And also, it's kind of inherently flawed for an artist to worry about what is or isn't modern, because it's kind of on us to decide.
Well, it leads me into another thing that I've always thought about you. I wonder where you feel most comfortable. Are you most comfortable writing for yourself? Are you most comfortable producing? Are you most comfortable, you know, where's the sound space for you?
I was going to say in the shower, but then I realized you're asking a bigger question. just because I really like to sit there and think.
Uh-huh. I do all my best thinking in the shower. It really is my favorite place in the world.
But now that I understand the question, both. They're different. I need both. I mean, I think there's when I'm producing records, I'm tapped into a little bit more of like a craft space, mm-hmm. which is an exciting space. When I'm writing, it's a little lonelier and scarier.
Because it's so vulnerable.
Yeah, and I got to wrestle with it myself. And, you know, I'm not writing lyrics for anyone else. And, you know, I could write tons of music and produce things. But as soon as you start, you know, kind of writing your poems and putting them into the songs, it's just a different thing. Mm-hmm. It's funny because the two producing records, making my own records, they're so inherently similar and different at the same time. Like my body does the same thing. Mm-hmm. And in the same place, I'm doing the same things, but it all feels very different. I've never thought of the right analogy, but one day I will.
Well, I wonder, you know, when you are doing your own thing, of course, there's a level of vulnerability there that has to exist. When did you feel as though that you were comfortable with your vulnerability? Is there a certain age? Was there a certain song? Was there a certain moment? You're like, okay, I can manage this, because it's a frightening place to be.
I felt comfortable with it, but it took me years to feel comfortable sharing it. So it was never anything that upset me or embarrassed me or made me feel uncomfortable. It actually made me feel sort of vital and alive when I would do it. But then it took me some amount of time to have enough armor to say, yeah, and I'm going to throw this out there.
And does that lend you to being a better producer, because you can talk to artists and say, this is how you can get there? Or do you inherently work with artists that are already tapped into that sort of vulnerability?
Well, I don't think it's a process that you ever let go of. Like, I think you're always re-tapping into it, reminding yourself how to get there, playing to your strengths, making sure that like bad voices aren't guiding you. And I definitely think it makes me better at all my work, because it's about understanding. You know, I'm not saying this in a critical way, but you're a songwriter, you're not. You know, if you're someone who can put a couple chords together in a room with someone, you're not necessarily a songwriter. You know, I'm talking about people who sit down and write music and lyrics together about that came from nowhere. If that's something that you do and need to do, then you can see it in other people. And you can see the glory in it. You can see the anxiety in it. So I have a lot of sympathy for it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that has always helped me relate to, you know, people I'm working with.
Well, I mean, you tap into something I wasn't going to get into, but the Taylor Damon Albarn thing, you know, you're either a songwriter or not. I mean, that's a really great way of putting it. His version of being a songwriter is very, very literal.
Well, it's literally, it's also wrong, you know. But I think the Damon thing, what it says to me, because obviously it's completely absurd and everyone knows that. You know, you're talking about one of the greatest songwriters of our generation who has her name as the only name on many songs, you know, like that's, you know, you don't need me to explain it. It's fact. The problem I had with the Damon thing beyond what he actually said is, I don't like it when artists who are the concept of being an artist is to be very tapped into a deep place. I don't mind talking shit, this or that, whatever, but I don't like it when artists sort of like almost take this Trumpian approach of just making things up. Like, I don't care if Damon Albarn or anyone likes or doesn't like something, but to unequivocally make a statement that isn't true, that you actually have no idea about, and not to get too deep on it, but isn't that kind of everything that's wrong with our world at the moment, is just people talking about shit that they have no clue about?
But the president controls gas prices.
But you know what? I expect it from politicians. I expect it from idiots and herbs and corporate assholes and whatnot.
I like the term herbs.
Yeah, I use it a lot. When it's from someone who's in a band and is an artist, I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, you know, it's such a vulnerable thing to be an artist and a songwriter.
Yeah.
You want to go full Liam Gallagher and be like, this person sucks, that person sucks, whatever, you know, do you, but to just sort of like launch this like weird baseless concept with this bravado that it's such fact. I mean, I tweeted this, but maybe before you say that, you should shut the fuck up.
Well, I could literally talk to you all day. I find you to be the most interesting person in music. I think the new album is terrific. I can't wait for you to come to New Orleans. I don't know when the last time you were in New Orleans was, but
it's been a minute. I think the last time you played there was Jazz Fest, before that Voodoo, and we've never headlined the show there. So there's a lot of firsts on this tour.
Well, we've got a lot of firsts to take you around town when you get to town. I'm going to wrap it up with one thing, and it's not to the Taylor point, but I do have one odd question. What is the oddest person? Because you've worked with so many people and so many weird people reach out to you. What's the oddest person to reach out to you?
Oddest person to reach out to
the me. One that you never expected in a million years.
They didn't personally reach out, but I got a call once about Barbra Streisand and I was like, whoa. so that's the answer there.
I mean, that makes my Jewish grandmother very excited.
Yeah.
Very excited.
Made mine very excited.
Jack, I like you so much and I can't wait to see you in New Orleans. I'll see you at Bonnaroo and, you know, we'll travel the farm.
Can't wait. I'm happy to talk Bonnaroo with someone who understands the level of power that Bonnaroo is.
Let's do it again. Let's talk Bonnaroo. Just talk shop again.
Anytime, man.
See you,
buddy. Take care, Brad.
Yeah, you too.
Consequence Podcast Network.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.